Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Joining us on the line now is Andy Saunders. He's one of the world's foremost experts of NASA digital restoration. He's collaborated with Tom Hanks to produce the Moonwalkers, an immersive show telling the story of the Apollo missions. In 2019, he created the only clear, recognizable image of Neil Armstrong on the moon. And in 2023, he received the Royal Photographic Society Award for scientific imaging. He is the best-selling author of Apollo Remastered, and his new book Gemini and Mercury Remastered, he again has restored images from these first missions to show them in unprecedented detail and tell their full story. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you for having me on and for the introduction.
Oh, it's great to have you with us. And what an amazing thing this must be to do. How did you get into doing this?
Yeah, I feel very fortunate, really, and privileged to work on this kind of material and something that I've always been fascinated in. And that's really why I started. I've just had a lifelong obsession, really, with early human space exploration, particularly driven by the moon landings. I was born just after Apollo 17, the last mission, so I didn't see them live. But when I'd learned that actually people have actually got in a giant rocket, rockets that I was obsessed with as a kind of probably a four-year-old, and being to the moon, that's when that's just started my fascination. But I'd always been frustrated that because I wanted to see Neil Armstrong on the moon, you mentioned it there in your introduction, but we couldn't because he held the camera. So the photographs we see are of Buzz Aldrin. So that's when I decided to apply quite an unusual processing technique on the other source of film they took on that mission and created the image I always felt was missing from the history books. And that's really what started me on this path of actually assessing the whole back catalogue of imagery from Apollo and now with the prequel, our first missions into space on Mercury and Gemini.
Amazing. And I imagine this is quite difficult to answer, particularly on radio when we don't have the visuals, but how do you go about doing this? That Neil Armstrong image, for example, what did you do? How did you create it?
Yeah, there are two main things I do. So the Armstrong image and what I've applied to the rest of the footage from all of the missions is based on it's very low quality, small format movie film. So a single frame of that, or even as you're watching it as a movie, it's not particularly good quality. So what I do is separate out the separate frames, potentially hundreds of them, layer them, stack them on top of each other. And that essentially means we can get the information from all of those frames into one. So it's not AI, you know, everything that's in this final image is on at least a frame, but that's effectively what it does. It strengthens the signal, averages out the noise, and we can pull out detail we've never been able to see before. This was really inspired by a process that's used in astrophotography, and I just thought, well, if we can put the planet Mars through this, why can't we put Neil Armstrong through it, for example?
Yeah.
And when I did it, I just couldn't believe the detail that was coming out. You know, I could see his face, I could see his eyelid. And so I've never had any image at all of him, no clear image really, other than a very small format fuzzy image, to have this now and also be able to see it's recognisably him. I mean, I was just, it almost like I'd gone back to 1969 and I was observing this firsthand, and I thought, no one's ever seen this like this before. So it's, although it's incredibly labour intensive, the reward is there with images like this.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that I do. The other key thing is most of the images are based on the still photographs, typically taken by Hasselblad cameras. And what's important here is I've been using the original flight film. So the film that was actually in the cameras on these missions, they'd been locked away in this frozen vault in Houston for half a century, where they'd lay pretty much untouched ever since. So everything we've seen from the early human space exploration has actually been based on lower quality copies. So being able to go back to the original source and have these high quality scans of them when we apply digital processing to those, again, without any AI, it's all done kind of sympathetically because this is historically important imagery, we can just see them. We can transform them. We can just see them like never before.
Amazing. And presumably you've got really specialised equipment or software for all of this.
It's not super specialised. It's kind of the standard digital processing software, really. It's more the time and the effort. So once you, some of the images are very underexposed, for example. Once you push the processing hard enough, you can get all kinds of artifacts on that stop it being still a presentable image. Although you can suddenly reveal something that's not very attractive. And it's what I do is more, it's the time taken and making sure it's accurate to get them into a position where actually they're worth, you know, they're a big transformation and they're worth kind of showcasing. So I've been lucky enough to have those that were actually there, some of the Apollo moonwalkers, others from Project Gemini and earlier, who were actually there to critique what I've done to make sure that this as closely represents reality as possible. Because I'll never go to the moon and I'll never go into space. I'm not brave enough and I'm claustrophobic. So this is kind of as close as we can get. And that's what the moonwalkers said. Charlie Duke, for example, this is as close as you can get to actually walking on the moon with these images.
That's amazing. You've got some incredible quotes from as you say, astronauts, that Charlie Duke, Jim Lovell, of course, is sadly no longer with us now, but yeah. Some people who've seen your work and really praised it. And Tom Hanks as well, wickedly exciting, he said. I mean, that's so thrilling, it must be.
It is. Yeah, I learned Tom was a big fan of the first book and he really loves this new one. He's great. He's as into this as I am. So to collaborate with him on that immersive show and have the images from the book showcased on an enormous scale was pretty thrilling. Yeah. Jim Lovell, very special because, as you say, he recently passed away, an absolute legend. People know him more as commander of Apollo 13, but he had two Gemini missions. So in this new book, he's very prominent throughout. He's featured in the very last photograph in the book. He took the photograph on the rear cover and he gave this wonderful quote because I managed to get an advanced copy to him. And what he wanted the book to do is just to share with the world the awe that he experienced when he looked out of those windows on some of the first missions into space and remind us all of the beauty of our home planet.
Yeah.
Because Gemini took not only some of the first, but some of the finest photographs of Earth ever captured on film. I mean, they are absolutely stunning. Partly because they flew to altitudes we don't fly to today. So they have a very particular look to them. Something that's referenced in modern sci-fi blockbuster movies. They've got a very particular look. These retro spacesuits, retro yet kind of still futuristic spacecraft, all captured with the warmth and the tonal range of film. They're just absolutely stunning in their own right.
Mm. Have you ever kind of questioned why nobody's done this before? Have you kind of thought, I can't believe my luck here?
Gosh, I thought that was going to be a moon hoax question for a minute then.
Oh,
have you
no,
questioned
no.
why we haven't
no,
been
no,
back to
no,
the moon?
No,
I thought you
right.
were going to say.
No, no.
Yeah, partly, but it was partly good timing. I mean, I created that. It would be very unusual for anyone else, I think, to have an idea of using this, like I say, quite unusual process on the 16mm film that I did for the Armstrong image. However, the timing was perhaps fortunate because it was around then that NASA got this original film out of this frozen vault and scanned it. So suddenly there is at least the opportunity to work on these images. And they took 35,000 photographs. So just to go through and try and reveal new things was an enormous, you know, I quit my day job and just decided this is what I'm going to do and dedicated, 10,000 hours on the Apollo project, just processing, a good few thousand on Mercury and Gemini. And then, of course, there's all the research because there's a caption with every image. So in this new book particularly, I want to tell the human stories. They took incredible risks during Project Gemini. They were trying to catch up with the Soviets. pushing the boundaries on every mission. There were so many life or death moments, and a lot of people don't know these stories. So as well as the stunning imagery, the captions also, you can follow along and, you know, and learn these human stories. So that research also took, yeah, a lot of time.
Yeah. And when you did the, not so much with this second project now, but when you did that first project and you quit your job to do it, did you know that that you were going to make some money from it? Did you know that there was going to be a book, or was it just a fun project to start with?
I didn't know what I was going to do with them. I just knew that I just got so frustrated. You know, to me, these are the most important photographs ever taken. And to see them in the state we see them, and actually they were getting progressively worse, because the more times they're copied, the more times they're duplicated, there's a degradation of quality at every generation. Mm. And it just hit me that the most important photographs ever taken are being seen in a progressively worse state by a progressively bigger audience, and that drove me nuts. And I just thought, well, I'm just, something needs to happen. I can do it. I want to do it. I'm going to do it. And it wasn't until partway through the process that, you know, we decided to do a book, and yeah, then all kinds of things kind of sprung from there.
Amazing.
So it can pay its way and allow me to do more work and allow me to take on, you know, Gemini and Mercury Remastered.
Yeah, it's lovely. I mean, your passion obviously comes through, and that's what's driven the whole project in the first place, which is great, as opposed to, oh, I can make some money from this.
I don't think you could take on such an enormous project, and it is painstaking work, if you didn't love it.
Yeah. And you mentioned some of the life or death moments that come through in this book. Can you give us an example, something we might not know about?
Oh, I mean, every mission. I mean, the ones that people may know, Neil Armstrong almost died on his mission on Gemini 8 when his spacecraft spun out of control. So, of course, he would not have become the first man on the moon. Gene Cernan, who was the last man on the moon, almost died on his spacewalk, you call it an EVA, on Gemini 9A. Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. He's got exhausted. He's tore his spacesuit. He got overheated, his visor fogged over, so he was effectively blind. Then he lost communications with his command pilot that was back in the spacecraft. So how he managed to actually get back into that spacecraft alive, given the situation he was in, is pretty incredible. But that whole mission, I mean, there was at every stage, there was something quite incredible. The way the... Looking through today's kind of health and safety lens, when I'm reading the transcripts about, so I had to read every single word that was said on every single mission to put these images into context. During a spacewalk, they'd say things like, on the first spacewalk, Gemini 4, Jim McDivitt, the commander would say, Ed White's out in the spacewalk. Ed, where, I can't see you. Where have you gone? And Ed would say, well, I'm at the back of the spacecraft now, but I'm near the thrusters, so don't thrust. And you think, what? You know, if they did thrust, it would burn through his suit and it's, you know, instant death.
Yeah.
And it's quite bizarre that was the critical control measure, was, oh, just shout if you're near a thruster and tell, you know. So just madness. Everything, it was so raw and they were so brave. And it's just right from the most minute eye in the book, I think people would be really shocked at just, yeah, the risks that were taken and the human drama that unfolded.
Definitely. What about the pranks? You talk about some mischievous pranks that they did on each other. That sounds fun.
Yeah, there was, again, a lot of these throughout the missions. These were kind of top guns at the time, you know, test pilots, fighter pilots. They operated in this incredibly high stress, high risk environment. So they used pranks. It was part of the camaraderie between them and perhaps as a coping mechanism. One example, so the very first Gemini mission, Gemini 3, bear in mind, we'd only just had Project Mercury, which is the first missions into space. We'd only just learned that actually, A, you won't choke if you try to swallow a food in microgravity. medical experts predicted all kinds of things for the Mercury astronauts, instant ulcers, going blind, heart attack, and that you wouldn't be able to eat. That was proved that you could, but only with things like a little sugar pill or some applesauce. So you can imagine then on the very first Gemini mission, Gus Grissom's surprise when his crewmate John Young reached into his pocket and pulled out a corned beef sandwich with all the trimmings that he'd managed to smuggle on board. And it was meant to kind of tease Gus. It was his favourite sandwich from his favourite deli. And we thought, ha-ha, you know, you're not going to be able to take a bite because crumbs would go flying around the spacecraft. So, yeah, there are lots of these little pranks throughout. Like I say, kind of a coping mechanism, really.
Mm. And I wasn't going to mention it, but as you brought it up, what would you say to conspiracy theorists out there who say, oh, no, man never landed on the moon. It couldn't have happened. I mean, with all this, you've been up close and personal with all these images and footage of it happening. If anyone would have been able to maybe work out that it didn't happen, it probably would be you. So what would you say to these people?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to not even engage with them because there's a certain type of conspiracy theorist. It doesn't actually matter what anybody says. Mm. They like to ignore the facts. But yes, I've been through now 40,000 pieces of analog film. You cannot fake 40,000 pieces of film back in the 60s. It would be easier. It is easier to go to the moon and take the photographs than to try and fake all of those pieces of film. I've studied them to the pixel.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no indication of anything untoward whatsoever. The other thing is people think, oh, we just went to the moon and it was just Neil Armstrong. How could you do that? Build a massive Saturn V and just go to the moon. But actually, you know, we went to the moon 9 times. We landed 6 times. There were all these missions, these stepping stones. So this book tells the stepping stones from first getting a man into space and then the Gemini program proving all the key techniques that we needed to go to the moon. It was a progressive process. Mm. It was very fast and they were very bold and they were very brave. But that's what they did to learn quickly to then move on to the Apollo program. So Apollo 11 didn't just happen out of thin air.
No. Absolutely. And what's next for you? I mean, how are you able to kind of top or compare each project?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly going to have a break. I mean, I've been doing this, like I say, the number of hours I've put in since 2019. There are more space missions that used film. So there is more to go at, perhaps the missions that came after Apollo. I may go back and study one in depth, like an Apollo 11, perhaps. But I need to be sure before I start a project, because like I say, it's Mercury and Gemini, this latest project, has been about 3 years.
Wow.
But it's out tomorrow, and, you know, that's the great thing. We start to hear the people enjoying the book, and, you know, you get a copy in your hands. You know, it's a huge, heavy book, coffee table type book, so it feels, you know, it's a really nice quality product as well. And when people enjoy it, that's kind of what makes it all worthwhile.
Oh, definitely. And are there other projects that you could take on? Nothing to do with space. I mean, looking back at old footage from years gone by, the possibilities are endless, I would imagine.
They are. Any old film really would suit a lot of these techniques. The difficulty is, I mean, thankfully I've built up a reputation now for someone who does this. The authenticity is very important. So I don't use any AI or artificial intelligence-based processing because there's such important historical photographs. So what I've done is it's just about peeling away the layers of aging and degradation and noise to reveal what was always inherent in that film. If I was to suddenly apply these processes to something new where I haven't built up a name, people might think, oh, is this just AI generated? Because AI can do some quite tremendous things. To be quite honest, it's still not as good as doing it manually. It's quicker, but it's not as good. But there's so much AI starting to proliferate. I do wonder if people would appreciate the work that's got into making the new images authentic.
It's another thing that AI, well, depending on who's looking at it and who's got the opinion, but is kind of making too easy for people. You know, the amount of work and hours that you've put in and the product that has come out of it is incredibly impressive and something that you're very proud of, obviously, and that people are marvelling at. But if someone just did a few clicks of a button and created, as you say, not as good images of what you had, but similar kind of things, it's like, oh, it just makes it all kind of, oh, well, anyone can do anything then, basically, with AI. Yeah. You know, it takes the creativity out of every single industry. It's quite depressing.
Yeah, it affects all kinds of industries. It's not just art or photography or science or history or you know, it affects all kinds of things. But in terms of photography, for me, if any AI processing has been applied to a photograph, it's no longer a photograph. You know, a photograph captures a moment in time, whether it be on a sensor or be it on film, if you could digitally process that and you don't, you know, add anything new to it, it's still a photograph. If you apply AI to it and nobody knows what's been added to it, how this AI algorithms, what it's done to it, then that photograph has lost all its provenance. It's just destroyed. So the result for me is, you could call it a piece of art if you like, but for me, it's not a photograph, and therefore it just isn't applicable to historical footage.
Yeah.
Could end up with a completely warped sense of history if, you know, if we're not careful.
Oh, definitely. But I mean, effectively, it's been happening for years, even before AI, with people changing the shape of people's bodies in photographic shoots and things like that. I mean, it's been around for getting rid of spots on the skin or cellulite or whatever. I mean, that's been around for so long, and people slowly but surely began to accept that as being normal.
that's true. So who knows where we're heading?
Yes, well, it's a shame, but well done for everything that you've done, because it's incredibly impressive and got some amazing results, so it's great. And if people want to get a copy of Gemini and Mercury Remastered, as you say, it is out tomorrow. It'll be on our website, so people can get it from there, and it's by Andy Saunders, who we've been chatting with. Andy, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations.
Okay, thank you for having me on.